Hello and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show Network's premier podcast about comics, manga, and related sequential illustrated media of any form. With me this week are Rob.
Hello.
And Andrew.
That one is me.
But I do have to ask, who is this mysterious stranger who introduced us?
You've just answered your own question.
So, hang on. For the entire show, I am now calling you the mysterious stranger.
Correct. Think yourself lucky. I'm letting you miss out the full title, which is My Revered Overlord, the Mysterious Stranger.
I'll have you know, I only have one revered overlord, and his name is Curtis.
Well, now you've got two, because I've been down to Deadpool, and that is now my name.
Curtis the Mysterious Overlord.
No, the Revered Overlord, the Mysterious Stranger.
Oh, it's all
going... I do wish you'd pay attention.
Have you been watching...
Who the heck is Curtis?
Yeah.
What? Oh, come on, Rob, we're waiting.
What?
Yeah.
Explain to the audience. Have you been seeing someone behind our backs?
No, it's what I call you in
because
secret, Andrew.
Because we will not be talking about comics until you explained Curtis.
It's what I call Andrew in secret.
I'm going to rewind the podcast back a couple of minutes and just... That's not going to... Like, to specify, we're not going to delete this from the podcast. This has never happened.
No, it's not. Anyway.
Right, well, that's made everything clearer. So, have we any news?
We have.
I'm incredibly uncomfortable.
That's not news. You say that every week.
We have...
That is true.
We have something to do with Inhumans.
Come on, Rob, get a grip.
Hey, you thought Inhumans... We all thought Inhumans Watch was over, but it just won't die.
No, it's the curse that won't go away.
Yeah, I think maybe they should see a doctor now. They need to get professional help. Right, we all know it was massive, massive dud for ABC, and so... Yeah, we all know what's happened to it. But, surprise, surprise, there is an online petition lobbying ABC to give Inhumans a soft reboot with a new showrunner, and it's already got 4,000 supporters.
Well,
I mean, to be fair to the petition, I too would like to see a series of Inhumans that was basically like the Inhumans TV series, but changed every single thing about it.
Including the fact that it was about the Inhumans.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, that TV series exists, and it's called The Gifted.
Yes.
Good.
So that's that sorted then. The petition actually had its successful outcome before it was even raised. That's one hell of a powerful petition.
Exactly. You've got...
The Gifted, there you go. You heard it here first. The Gifted is actually Inhuman Season 2.
Oh, if only.
I mean, like, the more I think about it, the more it is basically Inhumans, but with X-Men characters and also good.
It's got plot, it's got acting, it's got characters.
Anything else happened in the world?
I mean, yes. But I fear much of it probably isn't relevant to this comics and manga podcast.
True. Has anything else comics and manga related happened in the world?
There is one small bit of news.
Oh, I saw what you did there.
I've kind of disappointed myself, to be honest. Anyway, Trailer for Ant-Man and the Wasp is out.
Yeah, I watched it. I'm surprised.
Why were you surprised?
Yeah.
I was surprised.
Were you shocked that the Wasp appeared?
No.
Yeah.
And that also Ant-Man was there.
No, it was the Pez dispenser at the end of the trailer that surprised me.
I think that was the point of the Pez dispenser. I think it was meant to engender surprise.
No, though, I was surprised at certain bits, and I was sitting there thinking, actually, that's really clever. You know, like the bit where he shrinks the building and it turns into one of those little one of those little luggage things.
See, what I'm going to say is I thought that was a good, like, visual gag, and I do like the really creative use of, like, the shrinking and growing powers, so you have the things like throwing a Pez dispenser at someone and then making it massive.
Yeah.
Or the Wasp, like, shrinking down, just running along the edge of knives.
See, that's what...
But also...
Yeah.
Also, part of me is still annoyed at how ridiculously inconsistent, like, the size mechanics are.
Yes.
Because how come Scott Lang can shrink down to the size of an ant, but then punch someone with the force of a human being, but then Hank Pym can also drag along, like, an entire shrunk-down building? That should still weigh the same size as an actual building.
Yes.
But I think that's just something you have to make peace with these films.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't
question
it. I mean,
let's face it, if we went to entries in the MCU for gritty realism, we'd all be very disappointed. Physics. I mean, you know, Spider-Man's hardly grounded in scientific reality, is it?
Oh, yeah, I know. It's just, I feel like Ant-Man kind of annoys me a bit more because it's not just, like, it doesn't just go against science. It goes against what the films specifically say is how this works.
Oh, yeah, this is true. It does bring into mind, you know, the Thomas the Tank Engine bit at the end of the first movie.
Yeah, that's a movie.
Yeah.
Surely that train should just, like, float off because it's lighter than air.
Yeah. It shouldn't have gone through the wall.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a balloon.
Yep. So, yes.
Also, when that film should have ended with what Ant-Man shrunk down to a certain size, his molecules became so tightly compacted that he formed a black hole and destroyed the entire world. That's the scientific way that Ant-Man 1 ends.
What I didn't see in the trailer was whether there'll be a return of Lang's daughter's pet from the end of the first one.
I hope so. I feel like Marvel are good at kind of maybe throwing in just a little reference to that.
Yeah. But it's the kind of thing I expected to see in the trailer.
Yeah.
Because there were plenty of nods to films that weren't Ant-Man.
Yep.
In the trailer.
Isn't there another film about shrinking people? Is it Downsizing or something like that?
Thank you, Rob. I spent 2 weeks in therapy trying to forget that film. Brought it all flooding back.
Is it that bad?
No, it's not that bad. It's worse.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I
the entire first third of the movie is pointless.
Not much I can say to that. I've not seen it.
And the other two thirds don't have much point after that?
Well, they at least have some sort of sequence of events that lead to an ending of sorts. But if you can put aside the casual racism that runs throughout the film to one side, it's basically got one of those. At the heart of Downsizing, there is a firm and good moral message. But what they try to do is hit you round the face with it like it's a big wet haddock at every possible juncture.
Ah, Hollywood.
Or I guess a very tiny wet haddock, but also you've been shrunk down to the size where it's a giant haddock.
Yes. If you imagine someone getting a really large haddock and then shrinking you down to 1/5 of your size before hitting you with the really large haddock.
Yeah.
That's what the message behind Downsizing is delivered like.
Is it like the end of Power Rangers where they just slap Rita Repulsa into space?
I don't know. I've never seen Power Rangers.
But I'm going to admit, I saw that film the other night. It's actually quite fun.
You see, it's a generational thing, Andrew. Power Rangers was after my time.
Oh my God, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was broadcast in colour, I believe.
We had our own Power Rangers.
And in the Power Rangers.
In standard def as well. Mick, you know, not in the time that I watched television, where you counted lines to decide how good your TV screen was.
Mick, we had our own Power Rangers. They were called Battle of the Planets, remember?
G-Force.
Yes.
Back in Robin Mick's day, there were only three Power Rangers. The white Power Ranger, the black Power Ranger, and the grey fuzzy Power Ranger.
I would argue,
Rob, that ours was the far more progressive teenage team of heroes because they fought the world's first transgender villain.
Yes, they did. Not only that, the black Power Ranger, I think you'll find...
Sorry?
The black Power Ranger was a different guy altogether.
Yeah, that would have led to some completely different storylines.
Oh,
and your Power Rangers, Andrew, you didn't have the mighty assistant. They didn't have the mighty assistance of One Rover One and Seven Zark Seven.
Yes,
but they did have Zordon, who was a big face.
Yeah, but you know,
spaceship that could turn into fire.
Yeah, it didn't have the Phoenix, a spaceship that could turn into a Phoenix.
I mean, that just sounds. I think that's just a badly made spaceship.
It turns into a fiery phoenix.
Of course,
it's the coolest thing ever.
They all died horribly.
No.
No, because they're superheroes.
Yeah, all their vehicles could merge with the ship and power the ship up. Power Rangers nicked their ideas.
You know what? I'm going to make my own Battle of the Planets series where it's revealed that in every episode they just die horribly in spaceship explosions and get replaced by new people.
Oh.
And the other reason that Battle of the Planets was so progressive was even the fat kid could fly.
Yes. Oh. It was also very progressive because what was the youngest one called? The little guy?
Because
he had mental health issues.
It was like a noise, wasn't it? People or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, he had mental health issues and he was still part of the team.
Yeah. And he was never singled out for special treatment.
Exactly.
I mean, I feel like they kind of undercut that point by calling him Peepo.
I can't remember now, but I will.
Anyway, how did we get onto this?
Google will remember for me.
How did we get onto this from Ant-Man?
Ant-Man does kind of look like a Power Ranger, though, so...
True, he does.
But yeah, that looks like a fun movie. I feel like it's kind of hard to get that hyped up for it because it's in between, like, Black Panther and Infinity War.
Yeah, but have you seen the things about Black Panther, the pre-sale? It's outsold every single Marvel movie to date on pre-sale.
And I did see a news item that a band of DC fans are going to try and sabotage its
return. Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, not DC. One small specific section of the DC fandom. Just sort your junk out.
And rather than upsetting anybody else, why don't you just tune in and support Black Lightning?
Yeah.
Hey, I watched the first episode of that last night.
How was it?
Oh, I'm three in. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I really like it. I was a bit worried because it's like, it's a CW show, but it feels a lot more like the Marvel Netflix shows.
Okay.
Like, especially Luke Cage, because they're both very much about racism.
I think I'm going to have to watch this.
Also, I love the fact that, like, he's already been through his superhero career. Like, he's done that. He's got married, had kids, got divorced, and is now just, like, a high school principal.
Yeah. This is like the comeback tour, isn't it?
It's not something you ever see in superhero stories.
Oh, news just in.
Yeah?
That character in Battle of the Planets was called Keop.
Oh, right, like the Pharaoh.
No. More like a sort of short way of saying keyhole surgery.
Oh, okay.
Power Rangers has a big climactic battle at a Krispy Kreme donuts.
He's still trying to win the Power Rangers thing, isn't he?
Surely that's just a shameless rip-off of Ghostbusters, though, isn't it? Having a battle with the embodiment of a pastry product.
No, it was marshmallows in Ghostbusters. They're apparently not the same thing.
And also, it wasn't, like, ridiculously blatant product placement.
And are you saying Power Rangers never did ridiculously blatant product placement?
No, I was saying the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man wasn't the blatant product placement. Power Rangers has the line, Krispy Kreme, ah yes, this must be a special place. And then Rita Repulsa goes there, kills a bunch of people and eats a donut. It's amazing. I take back all the terrible things I ever said about Power Rangers.
I'm sorry, Krispy Kreme, this must be a special place.
Without an ounce of shame.
Hold on, is that the rest of the line, or is that just you describing the line?
No,
that is me describing. That's me describing the film.
Krispy Kreme, this must be a special. I like that line. I think that line should go in the director's cut.
Oh,
is it me, or is tonight turning out to be something of an odd episode?
It's odder than normal.
And you know,
it's one of ours that have much news, so we're just going to tangent hard episode.
Yes.
Anyway, the other reason that Battle of the Planets wins is because for our generation, Andrew, it was our introduction to the delights of anime.
Oh! There is one other reason why it wins. Power Rangers are just a bunch of school kids. Battle of the Planets, they were cyborgs.
And orphans.
Orphan cyborgs.
Their cyborg parents were killed.
Yes. Or maybe they never had them. We don't know.
Anime. Goddamn Japanese nerds and your animus, your weird runnings, and your jiggly parts, and your lady special gardens made entirely out of teeth.
What are you talking about now?
I've lost... Watch Devilman Crybaby, Rob.
Oh, that, yeah.
It was weird.
Yes, it is. It's that one's a special thing. That one just goes off to one side. Nobody knows what kind of guy was smoking in the 70s when he came up with the manga.
What was he smoking? And what were the people smoking who then read it and thought, we should bring this back. The world needs this again.
I don't know. I don't question it. Anyway, leave that discussion for Keyframe.
There's a scene where he shoots special juice at the ceiling.
He's not going to leave it alone, Mick.
And I know I say that, and it's the usual four-panel euphemism. Oh, well, I bet he means he actually has a bottle full of weird liquid that he drinks. No.
I
mean the special juice that I'm not allowed to mention because we're a family-friendly show.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
I think it might have broken me.
That's see, this is why it's an odder than normal episode, Mick. He went and watched Devilman Crybaby.
You see, I found Devilman Crybaby. I read the premise and then moved swiftly on because that seemed like the sensible thing to do.
Yeah, but Andrew likes his horror.
Which is why he's on four panel.
I do, and sometimes I go too far into the abyss and this is what happens.
All right, okay, shall we take a break there?
Yes, I think we probably need to.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week and do it reasonably well.
This is Sonny Strait, the voice of many of the voices that you grew up on. Yes, I raised all of you ungrateful bastards, and you're listening to The Geek Show. Kamehameha, bitches!
TV. There's a lot of TV. Even the internet is TV these days. And if there's too much out there to know what to watch and what not to watch, well, tune in to The Geek Show Podcast Network's very own TV show, On The Box.
Righty-ho. Welcome back, and now it's time for comics and not Devilman Crybaby. So, comics, Andrew, it's comics. Take it away.
Okay, I will. But also, the twist in the tale, dear listener, is that I was the crybaby because it made me sad in my soul.
Are you gonna?
But what didn't make me sad in my soul was Darth Maul, Son of Dathomir, which is a four-issue miniseries from Marvel. Although, confusingly, no, it isn't.
What?
It's actually a four-issue miniseries from Dark Horse Comics, which has now been republished by Marvel.
Okay.
I guess means it's still canon?
Don't know.
Anyway, what? It's written by... So, basically, Dark Horse Comics did a Darth Maul miniseries. Did I say Darth... I might have said Darth Horse. Best Sith Lord.
He's very fast. I know that.
He's just Bad Horse from Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, but with a lightsaber.
Or it's Bojack Horseman with a helmet.
Oh my god, I would love Bojack Horseman as a Sith Lord. Just as a grumpy, apathetic Sith Lord.
Yes. Oh, it so works.
See, now I'm just imagining a spoilery scene in Last Jedi, but instead of Kylo Ren and Snoke, it's Bojack Horseman and Todd.
Yes, this works. Oh, we're fixing Star Wars, Mick.
God, we're so easily distracted. Anyway, Darth Maul. So yeah, it was published by Dark Horse back in 2014. And now since Marvel owned the rights to Star Wars, they own the rights to this comic. So they're republishing it.
So it must be canon then if they're republishing it.
Yeah, I would assume so. And I guess because it's like set in the Clone Wars era, they can probably get away with more leeway because it doesn't really need to tie into the new movies.
True.
So, anyway, this is set after, well, quite well after Episode 1. And the general idea is that I think this is also a spin-off from the Clone Wars TV series.
Okay.
So, basically in that, they reveal Darth Maul. He survived getting chopped in half because sure, why not? got some robot legs, and decided to become like a space crime lord instead.
And when you say he got robot legs, is he like Tim Curry in Wild West?
I have never actually seen that film.
Oh, God. Tim Curry's got, like, the bottom half of him missing, and he's basically developed these mechanical spider leg type things.
Yes, and I would leave your coverage of Wild Wild West where it is. It's not a good film.
It's not a good film, but he said it's got robot legs now. That was the closest analogy I could find.
Yeah, no, he's just got, like, normal-looking robot legs.
Okay.
Which I'm disappointed by, because I feel like I saw some kind of art of him with robot legs, but they were like cloven goat hooves, and I liked that look. I thought it was cool, very, very satanic. But well, these are just legs for walking, and that's just what they'll do.
Okay.
So basically, he's done that, and where this series picks up, he's basically decided to go after like Darth Sidious for betraying him. And also Count Dooku and General Grievous. Oh, no, he doesn't, because first of all, he's been captured by them. So then he has a big prison break and like gathers his army and also goes to his mother, who's like a space witch, which, sure.
Hang on, she's a space witch?
Yeah, space witch.
Okay.
Which actually, now that I think about it, it's kind of confusing, because they specifically call her a witch. But yeah. Also Jedi and Sith exist who are basically wizards, but not wizards.
That's why I'm confused.
So surely if she's a witch, there's got to be some kind of fictional wizard that exists within the Star Wars universe. Like, did the Jedi know they're wizards? Like, do they wake up in the mornings, look in a mirror, and go, Jesus Christ, we're basically wizards. Like, this is some Harry Potter stuff we're doing.
But then again, you know, aren't they kind of a cross between a wizard and a priest? Because they are kind of worshipping the Force, aren't they?
They're kind of druids, aren't they?
Yeah, because they have temples, don't they? They go to the Jedi Temple, you know.
You see, this is where I find that the whole Star Wars universe is fundamentally flawed. In the original trilogy, you establish this thing called the Force, which is effectively magic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a natural force, and therefore your likening of them to druids would be accurate.
Yeah.
But then in the prequel trilogy, they say it's down to the level of a certain type of cell, is it?
Midichlorians.
Midichlorians. That then makes it science. So basically they're all technomancers.
Well, no, they're not even that. They're people who can use magic because they have lots of space bacteria.
Hang on, did they drink lots of Yakult? Is that how they become Jedi?
But that's just it, isn't it? It's not that the bacteria... It's science. The minute you introduce a reason behind why it happens, it's a science. It's not a magic, it's not a religion, it's not a faith. It's a science. And that's why Star Wars is not the best science fiction franchise ever made. It's not even a good film franchise.
No, it's science fantasy, it's not science fiction.
It's neither.
It's about an idiot fanboy who develops inappropriate feelings for his sister.
So it's a King Arthur
story.
That's
what Star Wars is.
Hang on, it's a King Arthur story then.
Yeah. It's a fairy tale in space. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Anyway, we're talking about...
I feel like...
But I'm not bitter.
Sure. Is this some Obi-Wan? Like, I'm not bitter. This is not the anger you're looking for.
It is.
Anyway, I feel like there's a very good reason we keep getting distracted.
What?
And that's because Darth Moss and Dathomir is fine.
Ah.
Like, it's fun enough. There's some good action. Especially the first issue, like Darth Moss breaks out of prison, goes to a planet, gets his army, has a big old fight, has to run off into space. But it's just, there's nothing in it that made me go, oh yeah, this is really good. I like this.
Okay. So how does it compare with the other Darth Maul graphic novel?
Oh, the other Darth Maul was like way better. Because I feel like that focused more on like giving Darth Maul some interesting characteristics.
Yeah, because when I read it, I thought Darth Maul seems like a very angry character.
Yeah, and I feel like in this he's also a very angry character. But it's the difference between he's an angry character through like complex psychological manipulation and brainwashing versus he's an angry character because mummy tells him to.
Ah, Yeah, that's a completely different thing.
I mean, at the very least, though, this comic does have General Grievous in it, and it's got General Grievous actually being cool, like what the original Clone Wars TV series promised me, not Wheezy McCoward face from Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
Now it's my turn to be definitely not bitter. He can wield like four lightsabers at once.
Yes.
Where's my awesome fight scene?
Well, here's the thing. He can wield four lightsabers, which means he can also wield four laser pistols, or two lightsabers and two laser pistols, right? Or three lightsabers and one laser pistol. Means he's got them coming and going. No Jedi's going to stand a chance.
In the Clone Wars TV series, he fights like six Jedi at once and kills them all.
Hold on, though.
Freaking awesome.
Hold on, though.
In the movie, he gets shot in the stomach and dies like a sad boy.
Just wind it back a bit, though. If he is wielding multiple lightsabers and or blaster combinations, any time he's wielding a blaster, it will be an Empire-issue blaster, which I notoriously skew with on the old sites.
Well, not necessarily, because this is before the Empire, so this is before, you know, the rot had officially set in and, you know, corners were being cut with military-issue weapons and stuff like that.
No. Even in the prequels, they were lousy shots.
Well, what do you expect when you clone a bloody bounty hunter?
Well, I would have thought that it was incredibly important for a bounty hunter to be quite accurate at shooting. So clearly they cloned the wrong one.
Yes, it's Boba Fett. Sorry, it's Jango Fett, sorry. And his son got tossed into the Sarlacc pit by a blind guy.
Well, you see, that sounds just like an industrial accident. When you put in by a blind guy, that just sounds like something that deserves a call to injury lawyers for you.
It's a good thing that Jabba the Hutt got strangled to death, because otherwise he would have so much paperwork.
Exactly.
Health and safety would be on his back.
Yes. Especially,
you thought this was an appropriate guardrail for your skiff? Ooh, no.
Hang on, why is this animal near the food? Oh, health and safety Star Wars would be amazing.
Actually, no, because I feel like it's half a film long where they go, hey, that exhaust port, should really put a cover on that.
We'll give you 28 days to comply with this.
Have you guys seen that? I think it's a Family Guy sketch where they've got the two guys. You know where they do the Death Star firing the beam, and they got that scene with the two guys just stood there. And then in the Family Guy sketch, like, someone should put a guardrail here. Someone should put a rail here so people don't fall off this ledge. So yeah. Anyway, Darth Maul.
Yeah, it's a fun enough comic. Just one that I feel like you'll probably read once and then never have any desire to go back to.
Okay. Over to you then, Mick.
No, over to you.
No, I'm in the middle.
All right. Well, I've got Cable.
I'll bet you have.
When I say Cable, I mean the time-travelling mutant hero Cable, not an alternative supplier of televisual treats. Right, that's that reviewed. No, seriously.
I mean, you realise it takes longer to say Cable's full name than to do that review.
Well, to give this comic its full title, it's Cable Conquest, and it collects five whole issues of the Cable comic. But it's a bit dull, really. I mean, certainly in the year that we're going to see Cable hit the big screen in the as yet untitled Deadpool sequel. It doesn't really do anything to make you think, I want to see this guy brought to life. It's...
What if I tell you that his name is Nathan Christopher Dayspringer Scarny Son Summers?
Sorry, what?
Yeah, in the comic it's just Nathan.
Dayspringer Scarny Son Summers.
Hang on, his middle name is Dayspringer.
No, just Dayspring singular, Rob.
Dayspring.
Silly.
Dayspring, and then what was the next one? Scarny Son.
Ascani, son. Son of the Ascani. I hate Cable.
I mean, to be fair, just the discussion on his name was far more interesting than what is effectively a humdrum search for a villain who's one step ahead. There's a bit of mystical code breaking to be done. There's a bit of a showdown. There's a bit of a, oh, look. This is the thing that I prophesied would happen, and now it has. Oh, no, it hasn't, because there's a little trick that I played 300 years from now that stops it happening. And, oh, look, dinosaurs! There's a guy who's one jump ahead, jumping through time, trying to collect something. And it's basically an Indiana Jones plot, but with time travel.
But and eventually, I guess not as awesome as that sounds.
No. And so, yeah, it's adequately drawn. But it's all a bit two-dimensional, which obviously is sort of an occupational hazard for a comic. But there's no depth to the story, no depth to the characters. There's a lot of ciphers that are just brought in to either be killed or pushed to one side or ignored by the earth-shattering events going on around them. And then there's some dinosaurs! And then the end. So, as I say, this is part of the same rage. I think, Andrew, you covered the Generation X issue.
It's kind of Marvel sort of current X-Men output.
Yeah, and I think, Rob, you've got an Iceman one to do from the same sort of series of collections.
Yep.
And it slots into there, and it's, you know, if this is supposed to be getting issued in this format as an introduction to Cable, then it's not going to make anybody go want to watch Deadpool 2 just to see Cable brought to life.
So who do we have to blame for this comic?
Well, Marvel. it's written by James Robinson, penciled by Carlos Pacheco, and the colorist probably does the most interesting job, Jesus Abertoff. But, it's competent. As a comic, it's competent.
I just hope one of the directions in their script is just, Jesus Abertoff, dinosaurs!
It'd be, if I was in charge of Marvel's appraisal process for their writers and artists, right? Where one is they get a massive pay rise and to choose which series they work on next, and three is you're on an improvement plan, and if you don't improve by this time next year, you're out the door.
Yeah.
This would definitely get a solid 2.
I feel like a lot of James Robinson's stuff is like that. He is one of those writers who is just fine.
Yeah.
Like, he can write a sequence of events that happens in a way that I do not absolutely entirely hate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. It doesn't engender any sort of emotional response other than, that's a story I've read.
Although he did once write a Justice Society story, which started off as basically Watchmen, and then suddenly turned into, we have to stop secret cocaine-snorting Satan-loving Hitler, who has taken over basically Superman's body.
Did it have dinosaurs in?
It did not have dinosaurs in.
Cable wins, then.
It does win. So there we go. Also, I should probably mention, because I think I got distracted and forgot to say it, that Darth Maul was written by Jeremy Barlow with pencils by Juan Fregeri.
Okay.
But you adding on that little bit of an omission segues nicely into it being a transition over to... Is it your turn now, Rob?
Yes, it's my turn now.
And that's why I deliberately forgot to say it earlier. I'm great at podcasting.
I have To Your Eternity, Volume 2. And this is by Yoshitoki Oima. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the name, Yoshitoki Oima is the person who also created the wonderful manga series A Silent Voice. Volume 1 of this, we're introduced to a ball, a sentient ball, which falls from the heavens and ends up on Earth and is able to take the form of various creatures. And it takes the form of a dying wolf-type dog and then of a dying boy. And these are creatures that...
Hold on. A dying wolf-type dog?
Yeah. It looks like a wolf, but it's not a wolf. It's more like but it's in the tundra, so I don't know what breed of dog it is.
Okay.
So that's the closest analogy I can say is a wolf-type dog, a dog that looks a bit like a wolf. But anyway, and then that dog turns out to be owned by a boy who has been left behind in a village. And things have happened. It's moved on from there. And he, you know, this being has ended up in this settlement with a girl called March, who's about to be sacrificed to their local god, which is a giant bear that's covered in spikes. And the girl is called March, and she has been rescued by her older sister, No, I think her older sister in this isn't actually her blood sister. I think it's somebody who is just very close to the family. And these tribes that are in this book seem to be kind of North American Indian type or Northern Japanese type. There seems to be a lot of correlation to the two countries in terms of the tribal cultures. March has managed to escape the human sacrifice. The giant bear has been killed, and now the fallout of that is happening. And March is accompanied by the wolf, who's also this sentient being, and by the woman who rescued her, and they've been captured by another tribe. And that other tribe realize that the wolf is special. There's something different about it. Its soul won't die. There's an old woman who kind of gives the game away because she's one of those elderly folk who's stuck in her ways and believes that the gods require human sacrifice, and that, you know, sacrificing little kids to a god will make everything right, even though the people younger than her are basically saying, no, that's not right. So there's that in this. There's a lot of that generational gap at play in this, the difference between how old people see the world and how young people see the world, and it does have some tragic moments in this. Ultimately, this volume is all about how you can't save everybody, and no matter what you do, there will always be a cost. But also, it opens the door to some other things. You learn a little bit more about why this being has ended up on Earth, why he's here, or why it is here. There are others like him are walking the Earth, and it turns out that they are his enemy. And there's this strange being who's just dressed in black who says to him, you don't understand yet, but eventually you will. These are your enemies, and you have to kill them. Now, I'm really enjoying this, I'll be honest. I'm really, really enjoying this. It's got loads of things to make you think. The artwork is really well done. The characters are brilliant in how, you know, in how destructive they can be, in how charming they can be. March is a lovely character. And no matter what creature he's in, there's always something mysterious about the being. You're not quite sure because he can't speak. And so there's that added to his character, the fact that he doesn't actually speak. So you're always wondering what's going to happen next, and you want to read on to find out how he reacts to different situations. Yeah, I really want to know what's going to happen next. I'm really looking forward to the next volume.
So, a generational gap where in a world where horrible things might happen. That sounds very much like this podcast.
And who among us isn't mysterious when they're inside another creature?
Well, we do have a mysterious stranger among us today, don't we?
That's right.
And I'm assuming that Mick, on occasion, has been a wolf-type dog or a bear with spikes.
Sometimes at the same time.
So that's what the kids are calling it nowadays.
Yeah. His mates just say, he's had a few too many.
I'm just going to chalk this up to my favourite ongoing joke of Mick and Rob don't understand what bears and otters are.
I'll have you know, I know that bears are those things that go fishing in rivers.
You make it sound like they didn't have those things when we were young.
No.
But let me tell you, Andrew.
I know you know what bears and otters are. I'm saying you don't know what bears and otters are.
You do realise just saying it in a slightly creepy way doesn't change the nature of the object.
Oh, but it does, Mick. It very much does.
I'm not getting involved in this one.
See, when me and Rob were lads, bears were something you had to wrestle with your bare hands just so that you could get your comics out the newsagent's cold, dead hands.
Oh, Mick. I mean, bears are still very much something you have to wrestle with your bare hands.
He's only making it worse, isn't he, Andrew? I understood what Andrew was saying. That's why I'm not getting involved in this.
Oh, you mean I was supposed to be listening to him?
I'm staying out of this. Andrew, take it away. It's your turn.
Hey, so I've also been reading Mr. Higgins Goes Home. It's from Dark Horse. And so because it's from Dark Horse, there's like a 75% chance it's written by Mike Mignola, and it is.
Is he just slowly taking over Dark Horse?
I think he is the Dark Horse. Anyway, it's also got art by Warwick Johnson Cadwell.
Okay.
So it's basically like a send-up of old sort of Hammer-style vampire movies.
Awesome.
Mm.
So, So it's about Professor J.T. Meinhardt, who wants to go to the castle of the vampire Golgoa, or Golga. That's what I said. I said Golga, because that's what his name is, because I looked that up as well, because I do research, because I'm very good at podcasting.
And it never, ever sounds like filler.
Never, ever.
You mentioned this is like a send-up of the old Hammer horror vampire movies, and Mick is our resident Hammer expert for Cinema Eclectica, aren't you, Mick?
Well, I will be once I get up and running and we find out where it's going to fit in, but yes.
So yeah, it's basically Professor Meinhardt. He wants to go to the castle of the vampire Golga and kill him while he enacts his ancient ritual to summon Satan with all the other vampires. But to help him, he needs the assistance of Mr. Higgins, the only man to ever escape Castle Golga alive.
Ah,
okay.
And then it turns into like this sort of slapstick black comedy, like
the, very much like the Hammer movies of the late of the mid to late 70s turned into.
Like there's this great bit. It's kind of visual humor. So there's a bit where it's kind of a flashback of Professor Meinhardt killing a vampire. And you just see like this massive explosion of blood hit his glasses. And another really great bit is when you first meet Count Golga. He does the whole, you know, rising out of his crypt, and he's wearing a dressing gown with his initials embroidered on it.
See, I like that.
I think the best part is that, like, eventually they sneak into the castle during like the ancient ritual to summon Satan, and you see the high priest yell, "Hail Satan, master of lies and holy serpent, king of night in the bottomless pit, I beg thee, hear me and come forth, come forth!" And then, like, nothing happens. And one of the other vampires just goes, "Really, Belazar, again?" I just love the idea that this happens, like, every year.
That's the 18th failed summoning this year.
See, I'm liking the sound of this, because that's something that you just don't see in any of these blockbusters, is just the number of failed attempts at summoning the devil or something like that.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this. It's, like, it's not very long, but it's very fun. And I just love the art style, I think, is a good mix of being really cartoony and over the top, but also manages to make some of the monsters look pretty creepy. Especially some of the vampires, they're quite, you know, tall and thin and pale.
Okay.
And also Satan is a goat, because Satan does actually get summoned, but it turns out he was just hiding, and then decides he's just going to mess with the vampires, because why not? Probably just wants to leave him alone.
He probably does. He's probably like, "Oh, bloody hell, not the vampires again. Why are they calling me this time?"
He's probably in the middle of a bath.
Maybe that's why all those summonings failed.
What now?
Just Satan in the bath going, I swear, I'm going to get a secretary one of these days.
Got to get myself one of them Alexas.
See, why couldn't Devilman Crybaby just be that?
What, Satan's Alexa?
Yes.
Or Satan's Siri.
And that was called Mr. Higgins?
Mr. Higgins comes home.
Comes home.
See, this sounds like a hoot and a half. I really want to read this now.
It is, you should. I will bring it with me on Saturday.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Right, Mick.
Yes, talking of a hoot and a half, that's exactly what The Amazing Spider-Man Worldwide, The Clone Conspiracy, isn't.
Okay.
See, I've already read this, and I know, Mick. I know.
I know. I've read it as well.
So you two have read it, and it's left to me to actually say words about it?
Yes.
Why do you think we gave it to you?
Because you're bad, bad people.
Exactly.
But why would that put my suspicious up? Why would that make me put my guard up? That's how I know you people.
Sorry, I think
why would it be any different?
I think you were right the first time. That should have made you put your suspicious up.
Yes. You see, this is the thing is, back in the day, I used to be a bit of a DC fanboy, and my only Marvel vice back then was Spider-Man. I used to lap it up. I used to lap up, you know, Venom stories and even a little bit of Carnage. But, you know, there was something about Peter Parker. It was fun. It was colourful. It was a largely good-natured superhero japery.
Yes.
Clone's Conspiracy is such a chore.
Yep.
Written by Dan Slott, with art by Jim Chung and Javier Garon.
When did it first come out? Silver.
Sorry? We've been well on the names tonight.
Yeah. When did Clone Conspiracy first come out?
2016 and 2017, because it's a collection of, like, I don't know, judging by this list, every Spider-Man comic ever. It's The Clone Conspiracy number 1-5, Amazing Spider-Man volume 5, numbers 20-24, and The Clone Conspiracy Omega number 1. Would that not be Clone Conspiracy number 6? Anyway, but I digress. And I think a few months ago I read the Edge of Spider-Verse, and it's just, there's so much goes on that it's confusing trying to keep a track of who all the characters are and who they're clones of and why they're coming back and what the actual point of it all is. Because there's a lot of stuff going on without anything actually really happening.
I think what the point of it is that Dan Slott has been writing Spider-Man comics for a very long time now, and maybe sometimes he just needs to fill a page.
Yeah, but yep. On this occasion, that seems to be the approach he's taken for, what is it, something like 200 or 300 pages. I mean, you know, a single story that the main villain of the piece is the Jackal, but then you've got Kingpin, you've got a Rhino, Abomination. They all turn up. Lizard, Green Goblin, Hobgoblin. They're all in there. Doc Ock. It's intense without really ramping any stakes up.
Okay, so how does all this start?
Yeah. I don't know. That's part of the problem. It doesn't have a start. It doesn't really have a satisfying end. It's basically just 200 pages of middle.
Yeah. Like, I'm thinking about it now. I can't remember at all how it starts. And I just vaguely remember the end of it being, and then all the clones.
You know, the basic premise is Peter Parker's at a funeral.
Yeah.
And has a fight with some people there and starts moaning about the fact that, you know, the one thing that he can't defeat is death. But there's no real catalyst for all this happening. There's just some people that start turning up who are supposed to be dead.
Oh, no, I remember now.
Yep.
Because Aunt May got
married. It's Aunt May's second husband, isn't it?
Yep. Who? Yeah. Who? Oh, Mick, you don't know this, do you? Aunt May's second husband is J. Jonah Jameson's father.
Yes. But that's the problem.
Brothers-in-law.
I think this story starts 15 issues of Amazing Spider-Man previously.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that kind of bugs me with some of these collected editions. If, you know, if there's more story you need to at least put some kind of intro. I mean, if in the individual issues of Marvel Comics, you tend to find a little précis that just says, just in case this is the first time you've picked up this issue.
Yeah.
Here's what's happened in the last few.
This is
who the character is.
That's what I was talking about though, when I said, how does it start? Does it have anything that tells you about anything that's happened before? Does it just...
All it says is, today we say goodbye to J. Jameson Sr., author, philanthropist, anti-war activist, husband, father, grandfather, friend. We shall not see his like again. Those are the words being spoken at this funeral that Peter's at. And then it's all by inference that it's Aunt May's second husband.
I feel like this is especially a problem because it's not like this is just Amazing Spider-Man volume 7 or whatever. This is like presented as its own contained thing.
So, yeah.
But and it really isn't.
That's its real problem. There are plot lines that come in from the Spider-Verse stuff and Edge of Spider-Verse stuff. I believe there's even a collection called Edge of the Clone Conspiracy.
Of course there is. God damn it, Marvel.
But yeah, it's 200 pages in the middle. I'm sure anybody who reads Spider-Man regularly and is completely up to date with all the latest shenanigans in the Jameson households, the Parker households, etc., will probably enjoy it a lot more. But as Andrew says, what seems to be a standalone collection, it doesn't stand alone.
It doesn't seem like it.
And it's ultimately really unsatisfying.
Also, as someone who was at that point up to date on Spider-Man comics, I still didn't like it, because it's quite a boring story.
There have been a number of times where I've picked it up, and because some of the set pieces are so similar, I've started rereading a piece that I'd already read, and then thought, this seems familiar. And then when I flipped over to where I actually had got to previously, the artwork is so similar, and the set piece battle that's going on is so, has got so many of the same characters in it, that it's easy to get confused. And
you know, I feel like that's a problem with a lot of Marvel's events now, is that issue one is basically, here is a problem. Issues two to the penultimate one are just the heroes going, oh, geez, we really got to solve this problem at some point. And then in the final issue, they solve the problem.
Yeah.
That describes pretty much everything that Marvel have done. Monsters Unleashed, Civil War II, Secret Empire.
I mean, the bit with Kingpin towards the end has got a little bit of a twist to it, but it's not that much of a twist. There's a whole load of sort of zombie-esque stuff going on with some of the clones. There are characters who were obviously really important in the Spider-Verse that I have absolutely no clue who they are. And very little introduction is given to some of them.
Actually, forget going back to you need to know what's been going on recently in this work. You basically need to be clued in like fairly obscure Spider-Man history to get a lot of this story.
Yeah. I mean, there's a tiny scientist that Dr. Octopus is in love with. She's clearly very important at some point in the Spider-Man timeline, but I have no idea who she is.
Her name's like Anna Maria or something. I think
yeah,
she's like
something
a
like that.
Fairly
yeah.
recent addition.
Yeah, but she's from the conversations that I had about her and with her, she's clearly someone pivotal in one of the many Spider-Man strands, but I didn't have a clue who she was. So, yes, disappointing and... You know, it's one of those comics that makes reading it hard work, and that's the last thing that reading a comic should be.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one.
So do I. Which, I think, considering this is possibly a rarer occurrence than a super blue blood moon, but we should maybe end the show here.
Yes.
Yes.
So, yeah, Clone Conspiracy. I wasn't sold on it when I read it. But leaving that to one side, all of our shows are available on Apple Podcasts and Audioboom. Just look for the Geek Show Podcast Network, which we are part of. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter or on our own Twitter feed. Andrew, what is it?
It is at 4PanelPodcast. The other Twitter is the Geek Show Podcast Twitter account.
Yes, it is. And you can email us. studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. We have a Patreon, which is on our website. And also, well, if you want to go to Patreon and look for us, look for The Geek Show. Support us. Give us your support and we will thank you with a big thank you. That's it for us for this week. We'll see you all again next week with more comics and manga and stuff. Until then, I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
I have been his revered lord, the mysterious stranger.
Curtis.
And I was going to say, and I've been Curtis.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.